Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to the Rick Vizio Franchise Focus. Certainly our favorite time of the week, talking about franchising with some of the franchising industry's leading executives. As you guys know, building off last week's conversation, we are keeping the priority and the focus on the young folks within franchising, talking about the Next Gen Initiative and a number of the leading franchisors and sort of leading energy folks behind making this program work within the IFA. And we're going to bring on Jim Cavalli today, the president of Iron Tribe, a franchise company that is intimately involved with the Next Gen program through the IFA. We have Jen Cashel back from YSN, Young and Successful Media, certainly someone who is a primetime catalyst for the Next Gen movement, and I have my co-host Rick Vizio with me. Rick, Jen, how are you guys today? I know we're still waiting on Jim, but we'll kick this off about him.
Doing great.
Great to be back. I'm so excited to be
awesome.
Back with you guys.
Oh, no, thank you for taking the time. We're really excited about this series that we're putting together on Next Gen and Millennials and Franchising. I know Rick and myself are both excited to learn more about what Next Gen brings to the table, and we both are well aware of the fact that it is so important to build this bridge between young, bright, intelligent folks, as they will be the future of this self-franchising model. So a couple of key housekeeping items before we move on. Obviously, if you guys want to get back to us on this show or tell us more about what you'd like to hear, find us at EducatedZ on Twitter. That's EducatedZEE. Find Rick or myself on LinkedIn or Jen or Jim to connect with us there and let us know what you think. And be sure to check out Rick's websites, including afranchisecoach.com and educatedfranchisee.com, and certainly track the action on entrepreneur.com, as his next article should be posting within a matter of a couple of days. So let's get the ball going. I know Jim's not here yet, so let's get back to what we were talking about in the last week's
hey,
show.
Graham,
2 weeks
Graham,
ago,
before you
talking about
Graham, before you even do that, let's congratulate Jennifer on her article yesterday in the New York Times. Is that cool or what?
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
It is. I mean, just think
it
about that
cool.
for a moment. Next Gen, Jennifer Cushell,
yeah.
New York Times.
It was actually the frequent flyer column, believe it or not.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of an advocate a little bit of a preacher when it comes to, like, the youth employment issues. So I have to travel a lot for it.
But doesn't that just gives you a sense of the importance of what you're doing. And I just, you know, I know let's get back to education, but I didn't want to just overlook an opportunity to just let everybody know that what you're doing is important, not just because we're
talking
about it, but it's important at a lot of levels.
Thank you. I mean, I think these issues we're talking about, youth employment, youth entrepreneurship, they're important to everyone. And they permeate every society, every company, every industry. And so it's such a gift that IFA has really stepped up, the International Franchise Association, and decided to really support this as a major initiative, because they understand it's absolutely critical that young people are brought into the industry, that they're trained, that they're mentored, that they're given access to financing and of course, education, which we were going to talk about now.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, let's jump down that path. So, Jen, do you remember where we left off last time? What was the brilliant point you had in mind talking about the educating of young folks and the franchising space through the Next Gen Initiative?
Oh, thank you. I don't know if it was brilliant, but we were talking about how entrepreneurship education is so valuable, but it's really missing the concept of franchising in it. There are a handful of programs that are really special programs around the world that are starting to teach franchising or have been for several years, but it's really few and far between. And there's an initiative right now to get more schools to start talking about franchising, because, you know, as I always say, I think people have this preconceived notion of what franchising is, and they tend to equate it with, you know, you know, working at McDonald's or something. But the reality is, you know, franchising is a business model, and it's a business model for entrepreneurs to help them grow their businesses. And when you teach that to young people building concepts, especially retailer service concepts, a lot of them say, wow, I can see my brand being big. I can see it growing around the world. I can see, you know, putting a lot of other people to work and creating a lot of jobs. And it, that's where franchising thrives. That's what the model was created for.
What do you think it is? I mean, that there's kind of this blind spot out there. I mean, do you think it's a... I've always kind of wondered about that. There's all kinds of, I guess, possible reasons that there's kind of a blind spot in the educational system. We know that, you know, the educational system is supported by large corporations, and, you know, most of education is about creating great employees, right? I mean, isn't that kind of always, that's the founding principle behind our university system since World War II. But beyond that, we have education, we have entrepreneurship now that is a part of most business curriculums, but it still doesn't include a really systematic study of business formats. I mean, I don't know of any classes that come out and say, you know, here are the different kinds of business formats. This is how distributorships work. Here's how licensing works. Here's how agency agreements work. Here's how franchising works. And let's do a survey of each of these so that we know what kind of tools we have to get into business or to grow businesses.
Well, Rick, I mean, I agree with you on almost everything. I mean, the part about not having the tools in the hands of educators about what the different business models are is, you know, that's a genius idea. I mean, I would be more than willing to sit down with you and map something out and distribute it to educators. I struggle with that all the time. I go into classes all over the world and talk to kids about starting businesses and running them. And very infrequently, are there any real robust conversations about how do you make money with this business? I think a lot of the conversations in the exploratory classes are very rudimentary. And then when you get to more sophisticated programs, even, you know, the top schools in the world, they are talking about, you know, very sophisticated finances, but they're often not talking about the franchise model, which doesn't make sense.
Absolutely.
The only other thing I'd say is, as far as, you know, the funding for schools, yes, there are some corporations that are involved, but I'd say the vast majority of the people who do fund the school systems tend to be more entrepreneurial people or individuals, big philanthropists. And oftentimes they're the ones who really are funding the schools to solve a need, whether it's building an entrepreneurship program or a science program or an alumni services. So I don't think it's as true that big corporations are funding education, but it is an older model that's being used to teach often. And especially with career counseling, those models are typically 40 years old. And so that's why a lot of kids are not learning about the opportunities in the franchise industry, to work in one, to build one, to, you know, become a franchisee. That conversation isn't happening in career counseling.
That is definitely true. Now I have a big announcement to make that Jim has joined us. Jim, thank you for joining the Franchise Focus. Appreciate you hopping on with us.
Thanks a lot for having me, Graham.
Welcome,
absolutely.
Jim.
So I know you sort of, yeah, absolutely. I know you sort of heard us talking about education and how it's lacking as far as preparing folks for being entrepreneurs, knowing how to run a business, and getting the background information that they need to be successful in the franchising space. Would, you know, based on the, you know, couple minutes you heard, would you care to weigh in and give us sort of your perspective on, you know, why you're involved with NextGen and the importance of education as far as bringing millennials and youngsters into franchising?
I'd love to. You know, I think that one thing I notice with not only the millennial generation, which I happen to be a part of by just a couple of years, I'm on the front end, of course, not the back end. But one thing I notice about my fellow millennials is we think about business now as if most of it has to do with things that occur online, whether it's transactions happening online or marketing happening online and many other things happening online. We all gravitate when we think of entrepreneurship toward technology and shiny objects. But when you look at the
shiny objects, I like that.
Yeah, you know, squirrel. but here's the deal, guys. 93% of the transactions that occur financially in America happen offline. They happen in stores. They happen in places that most of the time happen to be either a franchise or a multi-unit operation. More than half the time, that's where they're happening. And so no matter what everybody says about e-commerce and even online marketing, I can tell you stories and stories of how direct mail works better than online marketing every day of the week, whether it's email marketing or whether it's retargeting or whether it's search engine optimization. If I can show up in somebody's mailbox different enough to get them to open my letter, they're going to read it and they're going to respond much better than they'll respond to the noise that they're seeing online. So I'm not an online, I'm not a guy who has a problem with things online. I'm just a guy that realizes that online is distracting people from where most of everything still occurs, which is offline. And the best model, the best industry to help you be able to grow a business into multiple markets and help more people faster is franchising. And so that's why we chose to go into franchising with my brand. And that's why I think people should at least know about whether it's franchising or just multi-unit operations, because it helps you scale your purpose for getting in business in the first place to more people and serving more people faster.
Well, do you, I apologize, how old are you? I don't know.
I'm 33, just turned 33.
Okay, so you went through school, you finished school about a decade ago.
Yes, 2000, graduated from high school, in 2005 I graduated from college.
Okay, so did you have courses that talked at all about franchising when you were in college? Did that was that present in your education?
I had a business 101 class that literally addressed exactly what you just went through, from licensing to franchising to sole proprietorships and a lot of that stuff. And I remember we did a big case study. This was back in literally the fall of 2000. So. When I first started college. So we were talking about Starbucks at that time. That was a big, big story from the multi-unit world because of what they had done over the past decade before I was in that class. And so, yeah, we touched on it in a 101 class, and I wasn't a business student either. I took that as an elective. So I can't really speak too much to it because I didn't actually pay for an education that had anything to do with business. I was a broadcast journalism major. Just so happened I learned how to be an entrepreneur in college and got into business after.
I gotcha, gotcha. Interesting stuff.
Can I just mention one thing, too? Part of why I so was excited about you meeting Jim is that in my entire life of being raised at IFA, because my family was all involved in it, Jim is one of the smartest people I've ever, ever met there, who talks about franchising in a way that makes it so accessible to other people. And when we look at this Next Gen initiative about communicating this message to young people, because the problem is so much a marketing problem, if anything, about just letting people know about what's going on, the idea that we have such strong leaders and entrepreneurs like Jim who can go out to the world and tell this story, not only about the success that they've had in their own business, and the risks and the challenges that they've encountered as entrepreneurs, but the fact that he's used franchising as a model, and he is not only an outstanding, you know, example of a young entrepreneur who's just kicking butt in the world, but then also that he's using franchising to do it. I think that's such an important story to tell, and I'm so, so grateful, Jim, that you're here, and that Rick and Graham, you've had him on the show here, because these are the stories that need to be told. And Jim is one of the smartest people talking about this today.
Wow. I don't know about that, but I appreciate the kind words, Jennifer. Thank you. So, you know, for me, franchising is actually not something I have a great deal of experience in, but I do have almost 5 years of it. And I'm blessed to have a business partner who has 15 years of experience and a team who combined has another 45 or so. So, you know, it's been kind of neat because this is my most recent entrepreneurial play, and it happens to be in the franchising world with some veterans. And so for me, you know, I'm the president of a company called Iron Tribe Fitness, and we create fitness communities that change lives. That's our purpose. That's why we exist. And currently we're on a mission to create 100 fitness communities, gyms, and change the lives of more than 15,000 people, which we call athletes, by the end of 2017. And as I sit here and talk today, in you know mid-March 2015, we're actually at 37 fitness communities, 37 gyms in markets from Seattle to Miami and in between, open for business, changing the lives of currently more than 4,000 athletes. So we're a third of the way there on this mountain we're climbing and hoping to be at by the end of 2017. And so, you know, for me, getting into franchising was all about taking this brand that my business partner and I had began here in Birmingham, Alabama, where we're headquartered and where we were founded, and taking it to the mass, taking it to people in Denver and Houston and in Florida and Georgia and all these different places we've been able to go and creating these fitness communities that are changing lives. And franchising was the vehicle that allowed us to do that. And so that's kind of what drew me to it, because I feel like what Ray Kroc, you know, created, while it may have had a different purpose and a different product, totally different than us to the consumer, it still proved that if you build the systems and you create a model that works, it doesn't matter if Ray Kroc fell off the face of the earth, people could still operate it because the model was created. And we feel the same way with our business. It's not about me. It's not about the team. Yes, we're here to help, but it's really about the model. And if you execute it, you can be successful at changing lives and on the bottom line.
When you are looking for franchisees, do you target young millennials as your franchisees, or are most of your franchisees maybe of a different generation, especially given the fact it's a larger investment?
It is a larger investment, and that that ends up recruiting both. It really has happened both on the client level, the athlete level in each gym, and on the franchisee level. It's a higher priced product in both places. So in fitness, there's a lot of small box group fitness brand in our niche, because that's what we are. We're group fitness and we're small box, 35 to 4,500 square foot box. So there's a lot of people in our niche that you can begin a brand with them as a franchisee for half the price, half the buy-in. And then at the same time, we're selling memberships at the gym level for about twice the price of our competition. So, you know, one of the competitive brands that we compete with is CrossFit. Well, we charge about twice as much as CrossFit to be a member at our gym. So naturally, we recruit 35 to 55 is kind of our sweet spot for both our athletes and our franchisees. But there's outliers. So really, no, we don't target millennials. But the people that represent the brand, the people that deliver Iron Tribe, the coaches, the trainers, we call them coaches, that coach the classes, they're full-time, and they're here because it's a career, and they want to work their way up and own their own Iron Tribe. That's their goal in a lot of situations. And they really are the frontline defense of the brand, because they're the ones that really are the reason the athletes pay what they pay. They're buying the relationship with their coach. And so both on the athlete level and on the franchisee level, we're seeing you know, the millennials really participate in being the middle person between those two relationships. And we do have stories, several of them, of millennials who have worked in the model and then had a client believe in them enough to partner with them and go to a new market and do an Iron Tribe there. As a matter of fact, it happened in Nashville. We had a coach in Nashville who was coaching, you know, all the different athletes at that gym. And one of the athletes was a wealthy man who wanted to own Iron Tribes in Louisville and Kansas City because he has connections there, but he was looking for an operating partner. He asked permission to recruit this coach to be his partner, and now that millennial coach, he's 27 years old, is an owner in the Louisville and Kansas City markets.
Interesting. I know that, Graham, one of the things you were wanting to ask, and I think, can you connect the dots between what you are – what your business is and how NextGen has helped, and also your specific experience at the IFA conference, and kind of give us kind of your thoughts in regard to how all those experiences kind of come together.
Yep.
Jim?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry.
Talk to us a little bit about how your business has been helped by or engaged with the NextGen initiative, and as well as maybe a little bit about how the IFA conference was and what you got out of that. What did you learn?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that all of us in our lives need to be dedicated to, and that's becoming a better version of ourselves every day and being able to look back a year ago and say, man, I can't believe I did that or said that. I've learned so much more since then. And so I'm big on going to places where I can be in a room with multiple brains working together and masterminding is what I call it, on topics. And that's what you get at IFA, but you really get it with things within IFA like a Next Gen initiative, because what happens is you have thousands of people there. It's kind of like if you go to a big church, you lose the whole point of church. The whole point of church is to have community, and you kind of get lost in this big church, so you join a small group. Well, it's the same thing for me with IFA. There's a lot of small groups that I'm in within the IFA, and Next Gen is one of them, that allow me to be able to collaborate, to innovate, and just talk to people whose specialties and background and experience outweigh a lot of the experience and background that I have, and help me learn from them and do what I call swipe and deploy, and take little things and then implement them into my own business.
Nice. I think that, you know, the whole concept of collaboration and finding collaborative environments is critical across the board. I mean, the whole point of this podcast is to speak to franchisees, speak to franchisors, get them excited about, you know, growing their businesses because they feel that shared sense of understanding with other people. Because when you're an entrepreneur, you're very isolated and you feel very alone. And especially when you're a young entrepreneur, there aren't a lot of people like you, you know, that you know typically, but there are millions around the world. And so being able to tap into networks, especially in big associations where you can feel this kinship with others like you, really just dramatically changes the experience and your connectivity and your confidence even to go and build the business and fulfill the vision that you have.
That's totally true. And I mean, Jim is completely right in saying that, you know, the biggest value of the IFA's annual convention or the other shows that they or MFEX positions or these other, you know, franchising groups throughout the year are the opportunities to have breakout sessions and to have small groups within which you can really truly share ideas and get down to the nuts and bolts of business and help each other take away those, you know, 3 to 5 actual actionable takeaways you can take home with you. I mean, the big shows like that and big groups of people can be really overwhelming. You can, you know, write down 30, 40 things to do, but it's impossible to activate all of those things. But when you can get into a smaller group of like-minded people with similar goals and similar ideas or similar, you know, driving factors, you can get to those major things you can implement after the fact. So that's a very good point. But one thing I am very interested in, Jim, you sort of touched on it in the description of the company, you know, talking about a little bit of higher price point and a unique target audience that you guys are going after. You work in a very crowded space within franchising. There seems to be a new fitness franchise or fitness-related franchise popping up every other day. You know, outside of, you know, you guys being a little bit of a higher price point, having a different culture, I guess dive into all those distinguishing factors that help you guys stand out in such a crowded space.
Well, what we're really delivering is community. Everybody wants to be a part of the community. Some don't know it. And even if they do know it, they don't want to be sold that up front. So it's a really delicate way that we stand out. It's actually not on the front end as much, even though I feel like we have a great brand and we have awesome testimonials, which really help us market quite easily. And we're referral-based, which helps us meet a lot of new prospects very fast in each market. But ultimately, where we win and where we stand out is 4 months in, 8 months into the experience. And that's where most fitness businesses don't stand out. That's where most of them lose their clients, because fitness, let's face it, is a high attrition industry. People,
yep.
the same amount of money has been spent in fitness for decades. It's just being traded from brand to brand to brand to brand to brand because it's so crowded, like you're saying, and people just keep trying new things. Well, why is that? Well, it's the same reason that the majority of the people you have conversations with at the consumer level have said the same thing, which is, I've tried a million things, but I never get results. I never stick with it. So what we do is we make sure once we get them on board, they not only stick with it, but they get results. And they actually have fun doing it in a group atmosphere where they want to keep coming and they want to tell their friends about it And so we have actually very low attrition. 3% monthly is our average.
Wow.
And we have very high referral rates.
That is a very low number.
That's awesome. Would you mind digging a little bit deeper into the details of what that experience is like after 8 or 9 months? What's
sure.
that group experience like? Can you paint
yeah.
the picture for us?
Sure. So we are a group fitness model. There's little to no equipment inside of our gym. It's a combination of body weight movements, which we call gymnastics, weightlifting mm-hmm. with barbells that have rubber plates that you put on them, or dumbbells, which we use kettlebells, and then cardio movements, which are rowing and running and jumping rope. And so we combine these cardio movements, weightlifting, and gymnastic movements into a workout that we program for all of our gyms each day. So each gym is doing the same workout that day everywhere. And you can do it together as a group. And everybody is scaling their workout based on their ability, their capacity. And so what we do is your first month at Iron Tribe, you do a 101 program with other beginners, no matter what age they are, what experience level they have had in athletics or fitness. You're all in the same 101 class for 4 weeks, 3 days a week. You come in, you work out, but you also get lectured after the class with awesome content that teaches you the science behind our fitness and nutrition philosophy. The technology you're going to use to track your experience on your iPhone app or your smartphone, all these different little things, so that after those 4 weeks, you graduate into the program understanding what you're doing, how to get most optimal results, and actually participating for 4 weeks to get some initial results and grasp it physically. And then there's multiple programs you can choose to opt in for on a daily basis based on what classes are offered. So you can take a strength track and work more on your strength. You can take more of a cardio track, work more on your metabolic conditioning. And there's also some other tracks like yoga for flexibility and those kind of things. So, you know, every day there's multiple classes offered at your location and other locations in your city. You can go to any location and you go to class, but you have a coach that continues to have a one-on-one relationship with you throughout this time to give you that personal training side experience within the group atmosphere. And what you start to see as an athlete is you're getting results because the program works, the diet works, but you're also being held accountable not just by the coach from the gym you're paying a membership to, actually by the other athletes at your gym that you've made friends with that are texting you the night before saying, hey, what class are you going to tomorrow? And you're saying, I'm going to the 7:15 a.m. at this location. I'll be there. Well, now you're not going to miss that because you told that person you were going to be there. And so, yep. You know, that really has been a key. And then lastly, we have an event series at all of our gyms and all of our markets where we have events on weekends that range from workshops that help you work on your weaknesses so that during the week when you're doing workouts, you're better at certain movements you might be weak at. But they also are competitions that everybody can do. You've noticed Spartan Race and Warrior Dash and all these competitions people are now doing, traveling to all these crazy places to go perform, get their picture taken sliding through fire, you know. Well, what we're doing is we're doing that with our own tribe in each of these markets where they can do competitions that they can complete because they're not too hard, they're scaled to their ability, but it's a win. And that's what this whole thing's about. Everybody wants to know where they stand in life. They want to be able to measure toward that to see improvement, and they want to win. And for one person, it might be, wow, I got up against the wall and did a handstand push-up. For somebody else, it might be, I did this workout this fast 2 weeks ago, and 2 weeks later, I did it this much faster. But everybody wants a win, and they now can scale that into their battle with cancer, which we've seen, their battle with type 2 diabetes, which we've seen, their inability to be energetic with their kids, which we've seen people turn around, their marriage, which we've seen them turn around. And so now it scales into every part of their life, even though it's fitness that's helping make it happen.
I'm going to make a prediction that with your passion, your business is going to grow very large.
I hope so. I hope you're Nostradamus on that one. I honestly can tell you that when you say that comment, I'm telling you right now, the first thing I think about is, man, could you imagine if this was a household brand and everybody could feel the way I feel using my service and my athletes feel using my service? I'm not even thinking. I mean, dollars and cents, if they were the most important thing, Forrest and I, Forrest is our CEO, I'm president, we're business partners, Forrest and I would not be franchising this model if dollars and cents were the most important thing in the short term. Franchising is going to help us win dollars and cents wise in the long term. But in the short term, we had five gyms in Birmingham, Alabama that all had an average of 250 members each paying an average of $300 a month. And you can do the numbers. We would have just stayed there and done that. But we decided we didn't want to take distributions and participate in profitability. We wanted to reinvest our profits into taking the brand in new markets. And the reason I'm going off on this tangent before you ask your next question is I want to be real with the listeners. Franchising is not cheap. It's not the easy way out. It's not the short-term quick win. And you can talk to a lot of people in franchising. They'll all tell you multiple reasons why. I won't get into those reasons unless you ask me later. I'll tell you this, though. Franchising is a long-term play, and you can just look at the average royalty percentage, which is 6 or 7% off of top-line revenue, to know that you've got to sell, build, and open a lot of units with the right people to bring in those kind of top-line revenue volumes to win off of only 6% or 7%. So it's not the short-term play, it's the long-term play. And that's why I think people who get into it because of their purpose and their why and have passion, like you said, those are the people that win in franchising. The people who get into it because they see the opportunity to make a lot of money fast, there's ways to do it and work around what I'm talking about, but they're not going to win because their franchisees aren't going to win. If they're charging their franchisees for all the different bells and whistles services and they're doing a little upcharge on it to make a little extra money themselves as a franchisor, they're not going to win. If they're doing other examples I can give you, taking advantage of their franchisees on top of the 6 or 7%, they're not going to win. Franchising is great because your franchisees have to win for you to win. It's the ultimate accountability tool. So anybody you talk to, if you want to do an ethics filter before you talk to somebody, whether they're believable or not, anybody you talk to who's 20 years into it beyond me and is successful, they have character. They have ethics because they've figured out how to help their franchisees win, and they've won too because of it.
Couldn't agree with you more. It's
wow.
It is absolutely correct, absolutely on target. It's that I have people every couple of weeks, somebody calls me and says, I got this idea, this business, this thing. I want to grow it, but I don't have any money, so how do I do it with franchising? I'm like, you can't, and you shouldn't.
You can't. Yeah.
No doubt about
well, Rick,
it. And I,
well, Rick.
And I think, oh, I'm sorry, Jen, go ahead.
No, go.
I was just going to say that I think we've even learned that going in, we weren't ready. We are blessed with an investor who happens to be the CEO of a 200-plus unit chain, and we're blessed with five corporate units that make pretty good profit. But we didn't realize going in how long it was going to take, how hard it was going to be to build, how hard it would be to find the right people, and how much it would cost. We didn't realize it, and we're still learning that as time goes on because you go in with limited data on your corporate stores, if you have any, which you should before you franchise. You should have proven it out with your own dollars on your own. But that's limited data on what you've done operating the model. You have a lot to learn once you go outside of the new markets with different people.
I was going to say, Rick, I mean, you've built most of your career around educating people before they go into franchising. And I think this is such an important conversation to have because, you know, when we talk about getting more people involved in the industry, it's not just to say, you know, oh, if you're an entrepreneur, you can be a franchise, because that's not the case. It is a model, and it's a sophisticated model with a lot of rules and a lot of regulations and a lot that goes into it. But it does give you the platform for long-term success if you can stick with it and if you can build a solid company like you're saying, Jim. And, I mean, Rick, I think the podcasts like this and conversations like this are critical because getting away from just the sex appeal of the success stories and down to the nitty-gritty, what does it actually take? That's the conversation that entrepreneurs around the world need to hear. What actually does it take and how long does your purview need to be and what are you walking into when you're saying that you're going to go into a franchise? It's not just the possibilities, but it's what you have to do to get there.
Absolutely. It's a road. It's a road that you need to be willing to follow all the way down. It takes time. It takes money. You absolutely have to have a replicatable concept that you have proven out that's profitable. Profitable in such a way that if you add on to it a 6 or 7% royalty, it's still profitable and attractive. I mean, there's entire lists of actually, on my website, on educatedfranchisee.com, I have a list of all the things that really need to be in place in order to determine if your concept is franchisable. And a lot of it was shared with me by, Mark Siebert, the iFranchise Group, and it's really information they've put together they've allowed me to use on my website because it's really well done, right down to the iFranchise Acid Test, which is, exactly the the financial stuff behind it. It's really important that you have all that stuff in place before you start franchising. But if it's in place, and if you have a good profitable concept and it makes a lot of sense, the money's there. The people will invest. I mean, people who understand franchising will look at your concept and say, yeah, this will work. And you can find the money. You can find the investors to invest if you have the right concept and the right leadership and the right numbers.
And the Jim's whole story about how critical a team is and how important corporate culture is and, really providing a value to your audience. When you combine all those factors, that's such a golden formula. I mean, it's really amazing, but we can't even underestimate for a second the impact that culture has and that, that leadership and the human element of it. So the business has to be there. It has to be solid. And it's amazing that we're all promoting profitable business, which is fantastic. But at the same time, the human impact balances it out to make it such a win-win for everyone.
Absolutely. And, Jen, you just gave me a beautiful segue to my last question for Jim. Jim, you certainly took us through how you tapped into human psychology and the business model you guys have created have really harnessed what's missing a lot of the time in the fitness space, which is, how do we keep people here 3, 6, 9 months so it becomes such a habitual routine for them and they feel like they're part of something larger and they have these built-in tools to keep them accountable. So I guess moving from there, my big question for you is, I've heard that story. I've heard how you've built the brand, how the franchise came together, what you guys stand for. I know that story, but the PR guy in me thinking about how to make you a household name and how to help you sell franchises more effectively, these prospective franchisees certainly want to know it's profitable, that they can use this to achieve their own entrepreneurial dreams, but they certainly want to know the entrepreneur story too. So what is your background? How did you develop this idea with your business partner? How did this concept become created?
Well, it's a pretty neat story because both Forrest and I were doing completely different things and didn't even know each other. We happened to live in the same neighborhood, and Forrest was a franchisee with another fitness brand, Fitness Together, one-on-one personal training brand, and had a lot of success here in Birmingham with the five studios that he owned and became a master franchisee 5 years into his experience as a franchisee. And as a master franchisee, he developed Alabama, North Carolina, and Florida and sold and helped develop 55 franchises for Fitness Together in those three states. And so he did that from 2001 to 2009. And half of that time I was in college. And then the other half, when I got out of college, started a business that connected prospects at the high school level, athletic student athletes, with college coaches at all levels, Division I, II, III, and even junior college, and all sports. And so the technology that we built, we were able to partner with state high school athletic associations in Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, and be able to allow this to be a free tool for kids at the high school level to build their profile and get their coach to certify their transcript academically and also their highlights and statistics, and then connect them to college coaches. And so, we really were able to change the trajectory of a lot of kids' lives by finding them a school most of the time at the non-Division I level that gave out scholarships, and they were that caliber level athlete that could go there. And so I was doing that. Forrest was doing what I just described. And I started hearing in my neighborhood about this guy who had some friends going to his garage and they were working out together. and I kept hearing about it more and more and more. And then I met a guy who happened to be one of the guys working out in that garage, and he invited me to work out at a different gym in town. And through that guy, I met Forrest. And when I met Forrest, he was opening a gym because the garage had got so full in his house that his wife said, "That's it. There's too many people coming over. It's just taking over our lives." And so Forrest opened a gym in our neighborhood, Homewood, Alabama, just outside of Birmingham. He opened a gym in Homewood, Alabama called Iron Tribe in 2010, February. And I was the first member. And so I continued to develop my business and do what I was doing. And Forrest was trying to prove out the concept that he put together to open up this gym. And about 4 months in, I asked him for coffee. And we became friends because we were both entrepreneurs. So we were trading books and business journals and all kinds of stuff, talking about business a lot. And 4 months in, I said, "Hey, I want to talk to you again. Let's grab some coffee." And I sat down and I said, "Forrest, I want to sell my business and I want to open up Iron Tribes. This is like changing my life. I love doing this." And so that began the conversation of, "You ever thought of franchising this? What if I opened up the second ever Iron Tribe gym and we proved out the franchise prototype, so to speak, and scaled this thing? What if we actually founded a separate business that was there to franchise the business that was in this gym?" And so, you know, it was a lot of conceptual talk, but I think real fast, I'm from New York and I live in Alabama, so I already have a reputation down here of being a faster talker and mover than everybody. And so I backed it up, and so right away we started developing what would become the second ever Iron Tribe. And literally to the day, 1 year after Forrest opened up the first ever Iron Tribe, I opened up the second ever Iron Tribe. And it was 10 miles away from the first one, and it was on a highway that was around a lot of neighborhoods, but it wasn't in as much of a village community area as the first one. Everybody said it wouldn't work, and you couldn't see the building, and there was 10 different reasons it wasn't going to work, including my wife and my family saying, "What the heck are you doing leaving this business you've built and the investors that you're partnered with and going and joining a guy to develop a gym in Alabama?" Because my family in New York's like, "Alabama, gym, what, fitness? It's the most obese state in the country." I was like, "Exactly. There's people who need it here." So so basically, I opened up that second gym, and it took 90 days for us to see that we had lightning in a bottle. You know, the model is so simple, yet it's so hard. We're only asking the franchisees to sign up 250 people. We actually cap the memberships. At some gyms, it's 250. At bigger gyms, it's 300. We don't take more members than that. And the client's investing anywhere from $200 to $300 a month in their membership, and then we offer a food program and supplements and snacks, so they end up spending a little over $250 a month to be a member. And at our gyms in Birmingham, we have a higher average athlete value per month of almost $300. So, you know, the investment that the client's making with that low-level amount of clients is still providing the opportunity to have a million-dollar business. It's there. The opportunity's there. I always got to be careful with FDD and item 19, but the opportunity with the model is there with those numbers. And so really it comes down to, can you hire the right 4-to-5-person full-time staff that has the passion that you feel when you're listening to me right now enough to go out and deliver the model that can transform that 250 to 300 people in your gym's lives? And if you do, you not only will keep those clients and continue to grow off of referrals, but you will be able to open up more gyms in your market 3 miles apart. And that's what we've proven in Birmingham. And so, you know, in 2010, Forrest opened the first Iron Tribe. 2011, I opened the second. 2012, we not only founded the franchise company, but we opened two more gyms here in Birmingham. We opened one downtown and one in Mountain Brook, which is one of the richest communities in the United States. It was perfect demographically for what we do. And we've opened a fifth one since in Hoover. So we've got these five gyms in Birmingham, and we have aggressively built an infrastructure. We have five VPs, just hired our newest one from L.A. He's a VP of marketing, worked for Herbalife for 10 years, originally from Birmingham, got him back to Birmingham to be our VP of marketing. But we've got a big corporate staff, probably too big. If most franchisors look at where we are and the size of our staff and the infrastructure we've built, they give us the feedback of, you've been too aggressive. But we're betting on the come, and we feel like we need to be set up to support the 100 goal that I had mentioned earlier by 2017 and beyond that, because let's be honest, once we hit 100, we're to the top of that mountain, we're going to want to get to 500. So that's kind of the quick, I don't know how quick it was, but that's the story.
that's an awesome story. That's what I wanted to hear. Rick, do you have anything else? Jen, you guys have anything else you want to contribute?
I want to go work out.
Yeah, me too.
I need to go running or something now. and I want an Iron Tribe fitness shirt right away so I can run in public with it. I want to go meet my people.
Well, I'll tell
you
this.
Awesome.
I want to go back to something I said earlier. So,
sure.
I'm a big, I'm always talking about balance and moderation and kind of being in the middle, I mean, in everything. And I want to go back to my online offline thing. And I do want to say that technology has been a huge catalyst in our business and the ability for us to build systems and scale them and grow our business, as fast as we have. And so as much as we are an offline business that delivers what we deliver in the class atmosphere offline, and we always will be, most of our awards have been for marketing and technology. Our CRM system, which is Infusionsoft, we've been with Infusionsoft since well before anybody even knew who they were. We've won their top business of the year user award. We've been an ambassador for them, and they've been really big, not only as a CRM system, but their CEO has coached us as executives, and they've been a huge help. We've built our own software. And it has three user interfaces. One is for the prospect to learn about Iron Tribe. It's on an online platform that's responsive, so people can access it well off of their phones, but also an athlete interface that's available in iPhone app, iOS language, and in a responsive manner that people can access it everywhere. And as an athlete, you can track your experience. The cool thing about Iron Tribe is every evening, people want to know what the workout is tomorrow, and they have to schedule themselves for class. So we know that just about every client is going to visit our app every night. And so we take advantage of that by offering them resources when they're there to consume. We offer them the ability to track what they've done in this workout the previous time and many other things. And we've got to even get better. We need to look at wearable technology because it's a threat in one sense, but it's an opportunity in another for us to innovate with our brand. And then thirdly, our UI, our user interface for the staff, has allowed us to pipe in a CRM like Infusionsoft, but build a lot of custom things that help us do everything from billing to communicating with our clients on a regular basis to running reports that everybody needs to see as an owner, an operator, and a coach to know what they need to do each day. And so we've invested the dollars to build all that from a proprietary standpoint where we own it. And also not build everything from scratch because they're application program interfaces, APIs, for just about every tool out there. So most things you use on a daily basis have an API, and if you like it, you can, if you find the right developers, pipe it in to what you're building from a custom standpoint, and in a sense, you can own it. And we do that with Yammer, which is our collaboration network for our franchisees, like Facebook, but private. We do that with Google Apps, with countless different apps that Google offers. But we build a lot of things from scratch, too. I went and said all that for the last couple of minutes because for those listening, technology has been huge. I don't want you to think that I'm this old school guy that thinks offline is everything. And I want you to know that if you can figure out how to leverage existing technology, you can speed your growth. And you can sometimes it'll cost money, but you can pay for speed.
That's true. Well, that's awesome stuff. So outside of that, Jim, how, if any of our listeners or anyone who hears this show or gets sent this show, if they want to reach out to you to learn more about Iron Tribe, maybe interested in buying a franchise or want to hit the gym like Jim does, how do they get in touch with you?
Best thing you can do is watch my webinar that will introduce you to the brand. It will help you identify your why and then connect it to ours. it doesn't connect, no big deal. But if it does, we would love to have a phone call with you. So it's a 60-minute webinar. It's if nothing else, going to leave you with a lot of introspective challenges for yourself. So beware. You go to irontribefranchise.com/your-business-solution. And I'll actually, if you want, guys, I can share the link with you, too, and you, if you want to post it to where this show is. But it's pretty easy to get to, irontribefranchise.com/your-business-solution. And you can go there and get a chance to get to know us more and see if your why is the same as ours and maybe take the next step and set up a phone call.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you joining us today. Again, everyone else out there, if you want to reach out to us directly with questions for Jim or Jen or Rick or myself, find us on Twitter at EducatedZ, EducatedZEE. Rick and myself, Graham Chapman, as well as Jen and Jim are on LinkedIn if you want to connect with us there. And certainly check out Rick's websites, afranchisecoach.com, educatedfranchisee.com, and take a peek at his articles that can be found on entrepreneur.com. Thank you guys for your time today. I had a great time. Wonderful episode. We'll work together to promote this and send this out. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me.